I have been really looking forward to this series because I just know that it's going to connect with all of us, and hopefully for some of us, it's going to help us make some sense of some things. In the late 1800s, doctors and scientists believed in something called spontaneous generation. And the idea behind this spontaneous generation was that living organisms could spontaneously pop up anywhere from non-living organisms. So in the late 1800s, this was pretty much the medical and scientific explanation for disease, that out of nowhere, disease could just pop up on your skin or in your body, and diseases would sweep through families and communities and would kill, in some instances, thousands and thousands of people. And the assumption was that it was just random. And in some circles, it was just God's will, and you just had to go with it. And no one investigated how these diseases were transmitted or how they were related, because spontaneous generation was just assumed. But then Louis Pasteur came along and he said, no. He said, no, actually there are invisible organisms that you cannot see, and they carry diseases. They can be carried by the wind. They can be passed by touching someone's skin. They can be found on food. They can live on different surfaces. And these diseases are not just popping up. They don't just happen randomly. But there is an invisible world that impacts our visible world. And this invisible world, he would call germs, later to be called microorganisms. These invisible microorganisms are everywhere, and you can't see them. And this unseen world is impacting the seen world, and it's got the power to destroy lives and families and communities and create epidemics that can cross the globe all over the world and kill hundreds of thousands of people, all because of something you can't see. So he put forth this idea that became known as the germ theory of disease. And the idea was this invisible world of living things impacts our living, our seen world. And within his little close-knit community of physicians and scientists, they actually began to take this seriously. They began washing their hands. They began separating people and isolating people. And they began to begin to quarantine and watch to do certain things transfer from one person to another when it came to common diseases. But many people outside and people inside the medical community, they said, "You're crazy. This is crazy. You're seriously trying to tell us that there's something that we can't see, and it impacts what we can see. You're trying to tell us that there are these invisible things, and they float through the air, and they land on us, or they land on our food, or they can be transmitted by somebody else's skin. There's this invisible world where we're supposedly surrounded by these little invisible organisms, and they impact our visible world." And Pasteur say, "Yes. Exactly. That is exactly what I am saying." And doctors and scientists and the public thought he was crazy. Well, today, germ theory is not a theory anymore, right? We all believe in germs. We believe there's this invisible world that impacts our visible world. And that's why all of us, we've got a lot of stuff like this, you know, in our shelves or little pocket size, you know, in our purses or our man bags or whatever it is. You know, we've got this in our lives. Some of you, you can't imagine this in your lives. Some of you work with these little bacteria factories called children because you're teachers and whatever. And it's like you are like all the time. I remember when we took our whole family, we went to our sister church in the mountains of Haiti, and our youngest was 9 at the time, and like we all had this, and it's like after shaking somebody's hand before you eat, you know, smear up with some of this stuff. So we believe. Some of you can't imagine your life without it. It's why most of us are vaccinated. It's why most of us vaccinate our children, because not only do we believe that there's this unseen world that we can't see that impacts our world, we believe it can be dangerous. We believe it can kill us. We believe it could be life-threatening. We know this because of what's happened in history and through scientific and medical discovery, that invisible microorganisms can and have wiped out entire populations of men, women, and children. And you never see it coming because of this invisible world of germs. Well, in 2019, what we all know is this invisible world of germs does not stay invisible. Because at the right time, with the right skin contact, at the right temperature, breathed in, touch, in the right environment, what's invisible becomes very visible, and it can become dangerous, it can become life-threatening. Now, we all know that. None of us dispute that. The challenge comes in that Jesus and the writers of the New Testament, the witnesses of Jesus' resurrection, say there is an invisible world that affects our visible world. There's another invisible world that doesn't simply impact us physically, though it can, but it impacts us, our thinking, our worldviews, our attitudes towards marriage and purity and morality and finances, our attitudes towards relationships, how we date, how we do business, how we interact. It can be physically life-threatening. It can be emotionally life-threatening. It can be relationally life-threatening. It is an invisible world, and it's all around us, and it impacts all that we do and everything in our life. And yet, as I say this, there's some of you that may tend to resist this. We're like the people of the late 1800s who laughed at the idea. You're trying to tell me that there's some invisible world, some world I can't see, that impacts the world that I can see. You're telling me there's something I can't see that's all around me and just floats through the air and miraculously, just wherever it wants to, affects my visible world. That's really difficult to believe. And so for the next few weeks, it's going to be a little difficult to believe, but the same Jesus that said, love one another, and we all love that part, the same New Testament writer that writes, husbands, love your wives, and all the wives love that, the same New Testament writer that says, children, obey your parents, and all the parents love that, right? That the same Jesus and same New Testament writers also say that there is an invisible world that impacts your visible world every single day. And you don't need a microscope to see it. You don't need a microscope to discover it. All you need is a rear view mirror. Because all of you, you can look back on your life just like I can look back on my life and say, how could I have been so stupid? How could I have been so blind? How could I have thought that was a good thing when looking back, it was so clearly a bad thing? How could I have thought that was a good idea when clearly now I can see that was a bad idea? How could I have been so deceived? What is wrong with me? How could things have been so twisted in my mind? How could I have been so confused? How did I think that that relationship was going to go anywhere good? How did I think that that particular approach to handling my finances was going to lead to anything good? Why could I not see it? Why could I not see that what I thought was a pastime was actually a pathway to an addiction that now I know that I'm going to struggle with for the rest of my life? See, in the moment when we had the opportunity, when I was there alone, or I was alone with him or with her or with them, it all made sense. How is it things got so twisted in my mind that here I am now today, and now today I'm paying a price physically, emotionally, relationally, mentally, financially, for decisions that I made in the moment that in the moment made so much sense. It was just such a fog. And for some of you, you don't need a rearview mirror, you just need a mirror because you're dealing with it right now. You're in the middle of it now. It's like you make good decisions in the moment of sanity, but then you go out and you get with a certain individual or a certain group of individuals, or you find yourself in a certain circumstance at work or at school or on a Friday or Saturday night, and it's like you lose your mind. It's like you abandon everything you believe and your thinking becomes twisted. And you allow yourself to talk yourself into doing and saying things that you know deep down you have no business doing or saying. And then with the sunrise of the next day, you regain your sanity and your focus and your perspective. And you look in the mirror and you go, what's wrong with me? It's like I lose my mind. It's like things that are just so clearly wrong in some environments are not so clearly wrong in other environments. But then I come out of those environments and I regret it. I come out of those environments and I have consequences. I'm thinking, what's wrong with me? And if it's not you, you just have to look around, just like I can look around. And all of us, we have some people. We have people that we love. We have people that we want the best for. And we stand on the periphery of their lives and we watch them make decisions. We think, why can't you see it the way I see it? Why is it so clear to me and such a fog to you? Why is it that you're able to stand out and say, you're about to make a terrible decision that you're going to regret? And they argue their case, and their logic and their thinking is so twisted. And the rest of us, you know, we're standing on the outside, the periphery of their lives, saying, you're going to regret this decision. You may regret this decision for the rest of your lives. But in the moment for them, it just makes perfect sense. It's because there's a twist. There's a deception. There's a way of thinking that only makes sense in the moment. And then we look back. I mean, historically, culturally, as a people, as a country, there were twists in our thinking that led to the deaths of people, of thousands and thousands of indigenous people, the persecution of people, the enslavement of people we thought was a good idea, the mistreatment of people. And then we come to our senses, think, what were we doing? What were we thinking? How could we have supported that? How could we have thought that that was the right thing to do? It's simple. It's simple, as we're going to see this morning. See, Jesus and the New Testament authors, they answer this for us because there's a twist. There's a distortion of the truth. And it's just enough to get us in trouble, but not enough to scare us away. And the one behind the twist will never tip his hand too much. He will never make himself be too obvious. For were he to become obvious, we would see him for who he really is and we would run the other direction. But not everybody falls for this. I mean, there are people that they seem to somehow be available to navigate all this and avoid deception. They don't seem to make these bad decisions. They do marriage differently and parenting differently, and they don't buy in the culture's definition of how I handle my sexuality. And you look at some of these people, and it's like, you know, I want a marriage like theirs. I want a dating relationship like theirs. I want to have self-esteem like they do, a sense of just kind of worth and security. I want to be that emotionally healthy and have those kinds of habits. I want to be financially free like they seem to be financially free. But let's face it, those people, they're the exception and not the rule. Because we live in a culture that's been twisted. And once we step outside of this building and go outside into our day-to-day worlds, those truths that maybe in this context may be so self-evident, when we get into the context outside of this building, somehow now they're just not that self-evident. In some cases, we lose our way. We lose our place. We lose our perspective. In some cases, we lose relationships, careers. Now, Jesus gives us a real specific insight into this unseen world. We're going to be in John chapter 8, and I've got to warn you that Jesus' explanation of the unseen world is a little unsettling. Just like Louis Pasteur's unseen world of germ theory was to his culture in the 1800s. Now, I love the book of John. The book of John is just 21 chapters. In fact, if you're someone you thought, you know, I should start reading the Bible or I should start reading the Bible again, John would be a great place to start. I mean, you could start today or start tomorrow and just read one chapter a day, and in 3 weeks, in 21 days, you would have experienced the book of John, and you learn so much about Jesus and who he is and what he taught and how he treated people, and you just get all of these amazing things out of the book of John. And again, there's only 21 chapters. It's just so rich. And the book of John, for example, is where we get the verse that we've all heard. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life. I mean, all of us have heard that verse. And that comes from the book of John. There's so many great things in the book of John. But also in the book of John, we get Jesus' take on this unseen world, and it's a little unsettling. In fact, when I read these verses, for some of you, you may go, okay, that's kind of where I draw the line. You know, I'd like to be a Christian. I'd like to be all in, but like this is the part I have a hard time buying into. Or like I love Jesus and I like the whole let's love one another, let's all go to heaven thing. But as we move into these verses, here's what you need to think about. You can't really do that. You can't really do that with any of the Gospels. If you love what Jesus says about the parts that are easy, you have to at least pause and consider the parts of what Jesus said that are hard. In fact, you cannot cherry pick just the teachings of Jesus in the New Testament that you like, the ones that line up with your way that you already think. Because if you do that, you end up like the people you really can't stand. What I mean is, you know, there's people that you've experienced in your life. If you spent any time in your lifetime in the church world or whatever, you've discovered those people that don't use the Bible as a light; they use it as a club, and they use it on you, right? Or you have groups of people who go, well, two people can play at that cherry picking game, and they can stand out with signs that say, "God hates you. No tears for queers. Planes crash, God laughs. God is your enemy." Those people, they've got a chapter and a verse. The Pharisees in the New Testament, they had a sentence or a passage in the Jewish scriptures that they would cherry pick to use their to justify themselves for mistreating people. So we can't just ignore the parts that are hard just because we don't like them or because we find it difficult to understand. And here's Jesus' take on the invisible world. It's in John chapter 8. Here's what's going on. So Jesus is having a conversation with the Klingons of his day, the stormtroopers, the religious leaders, you know, the people who are always a problem for him, right? And he's far enough into his ministry. He's done so many miracles. He's done all of these amazing things that people around him are going, "I think he might be the Messiah." They're starting to think he might be the Messiah. But the people standing on the periphery going, "No, I don't think so," are the religious leaders. And these are the ones that should have been the easiest to convince because they should have known, they knew, but they didn't get it, what to look for. And they do not like Jesus. So Jesus, he's having this conversation with them, and he's saying, "After all you've seen me do, after all you've seen me say, do you still not recognize the fact that I have come from God?" And the response is, "No. We have Abraham as our father. We have Moses. If God wanted to say something to us, he wouldn't say it through you. He would have said it through Abraham. He would have said it through Moses. You're a false Messiah. You're a false prophet. We do not think you are from God." And Jesus says, if you were really sons of Abraham, if you were really devout followers of God and Abraham and Moses, you would recognize me. The problem is, the reason why you don't recognize me is because you are not really followers of God. In the next verses, one of the ones I really love Jesus, because he takes off the gloves and he lets them on no uncertain terms know why it is, despite all he has done, that makes it so obvious that he is from God, why it is that they still do not recognize that he's from God. So John 8, verse 43. So it's in the middle of their exchange, and Jesus says, "Why is my language not clear to you? Why is it that you can't seem to get it? Because you are unable to hear what I say." Why? Why is that? Verse 44. "I'll tell you why you don't know who I am. Because you belong to your daddy, the devil. You belong to your father, the devil, and you want to carry out your father's desires." Hey, guys, I'll tell you why you don't recognize who I am, because there is a deceiver. And he has so deceived you that in the face of overwhelming evidence, your thinking is twisted just enough so that you take what I say and what I do and you attribute it to something else other than God. The problem is that you have been influenced by, you have been deceived by, you're under the power of your father, the devil. Now, this was so offensive to these religious leaders. I mean, they had just gotten done saying, "We follow our father, Abraham." Jesus is going, "Abraham ain't your daddy. Who's your daddy? Satan is your daddy. The devil is your daddy. He is your father." Like, try to work that into a conversation sometime with somebody that's not getting it, right? Your father's the devil. So, you know, you belong to your father, the devil, and you want to carry out your father's desires. And his desire is confusion. Now, what he says next, for some of you, your response might be, okay, well, Jesus is just using metaphor. He's just using figure of speech. I mean, he doesn't really believe there's a devil. Like, he was Jesus. Jesus goes on. He, talking about the devil, he was a murderer from the beginning. Talking about the Garden of Eden. He was a murderer from the beginning. So a little foreshadowing. Guess what you guys are going to do to me? You're going to take me and you're going to murder me. And that's understandable because your dad is the devil. And that's what he does. Your father loves to kill people. He was a murderer from the beginning, not holding to the truth, for there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his native language, for he is a liar and the father of lies. The source, the originator. So here's what Jesus believed. You don't have to believe this. I'm just letting you know this is what Jesus believed. Jesus believed that there was actually a personality, a he, an entity, an individual, a devil. Jesus believed that. Now, it might be hard for you to believe, but you need to know that Jesus believed it. And here's what Jesus believed about him. Jesus believed that the devil's ultimate agenda is murder, the destruction of human life. And the means by which he achieves that is deception. And as you read the rest of Scripture, as we'll see in a minute, there's a sense in which the devil's power has been somewhat curtailed, but his agenda has never changed. It's always been the same. And the means by which he carries it out is limited to deception, distortion. It's limited to twisting the truth. And he has the ability, he has the freedom, the power to so deceive people that it results in the destruction of human life and all that is good, all that we cherish, all that we value. The destruction of relationships, marriage, parent-child relationships, sibling relationships, friendships, community, everything that's sacred to us. And Satan's agenda is simply to destroy all of that. He's got one tool in his toolbox, and he's very good at it. Deception. Through so confusing the human mind that we think what is right is actually wrong, and what is wrong is actually right. And his end goal is the destruction of the soul, of the spirit, of the mind, of the body. And here's another glimpse into Jesus' view on this whole thing. He says in the same book, in John chapter 14, he's talking to his closest friends and followers, and he says, I'll not say much more to you right now, because his time, his moment has come. He says, for the prince of this world is coming, and he has no hold over me. Now again, this is really difficult to understand, but here's the thing. Every Sunday, I stand up and I put this little piece of plastic on my face and I speak and it projects my voice out and I don't have a clue how it does that, right? I have this thing, I use this thing all the time. I do not understand how it works, but that doesn't mean I don't apply it. So just because we don't understand thing doesn't mean it isn't real or it isn't applicable, right? So there's a lot we don't fully understand, but here's the thing. When somebody can predict and pull off their own death and resurrection, I think we should just go with them. And Jesus believed somehow there's a Satan, there's a devil, that there is a prince of this world, and this world, this ball of dirt, this globe that we live on, that his domain, he said, is this world. The prince of this world is coming. Then in Luke chapter 4, this is one of the temptations of Jesus. Jesus was tempted to do several things. This is chapter 4, verse 5. The devil led Jesus up to a high place and showed him, you know, we don't know exactly what this looked like, how this happened, but he shows him in an instant all the kingdoms of the world. And he said to him, I will give you all their authority and their splendor. It's like, what? Yeah, Jesus, I, the devil, will give you, Jesus, all the authority. I'm going to give you all the authority, all the kingdoms, all the splendor of the world. I'll do that because it has been given to me. And I can give it to anyone I want to. And you know what Jesus didn't say? Jesus didn't say, whatever, Satan. He didn't go, you can't do that. See, you only offer something if it's yours to give. Now again, this it's disturbing. I can't fill in all the gaps. I can't answer all of your questions. I got plenty of questions of my own. But this scripture teaches that you and I live on a planet. We live on a globe. We live on this earth. And there is an unseen world that affects our seen world. And our world has been given to or placed under the authority of a personality, an entity that we can't see. Jesus refers to him as the devil. And his agenda is the end of human life. And the means by which he accomplishes this is through deception. Apparently, he's not been given control of everything in terms of what he can do, but he has been given authority. He's been given means, and it's limited to deception through the twisting of truth, through twisting what is evident, you know, nature, creation, all the things that actually point to God. Now, this is a little disconcerting. For some of you, maybe it explains some things. Maybe for some of you, you need to begin to factor that into your life. You need to begin to factor that into some of the struggles that you have with temptation, to factor it into some of the struggles that you have in your relationships with people that you're closest to, that it isn't just the person that you're looking into the eyes to that's a problem, that there is this unseen world that is working to impact our seen world, our relationships, that it's not just you. I mean, we don't want to go to the other end, you know, the devil made me do it kind of thing. I mean, we can't go to the other end just to like try and excuse it, but or you think of these moments where it seems like you have these moments of clarity, but you get yourself in certain scenarios with certain people, it's like you lose your mind. And you just it just impacts everything you see. Now, not long after Jesus said this, sure enough, the men who claimed to be children of Abraham proved that Jesus was right, their father was the devil, because they lied about Jesus, they had him falsely accused, and they killed him. Because that's what the devil does. Then not many years later, the Apostle Paul, who he understood what Jesus taught. I mean, you need to understand that leading up to this time, like the idea of a devil and all this just wasn't really part of Jewish mindset. Jesus introduced us to this. And in Paul, he understood what Jesus taught. And he writes a letter to some Christians in Ephesus. And he's talking to them about how to live their lives and how to love their children and how to get along in their marriages, how to get along in business. And it's just all so relational. It's like, here's what to do and not to do and where to be careful. And at the end of this book, and there are these verses. And if you read them in just in isolation, it's kind of like, well, why is it in here? But listen to these words through this grid, through these lenses. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 11, Paul says, I want you to put on the full armor of God. And you only have to put on armor if something's getting ready to come at you, right? So that you can take your stand against the devil, the devil's, and what's the next word? Schemes. So here's what Paul believed. The Apostle Paul, who wrote most of the New Testament, believed that there was a devil, a personality, an entity, an individual, and he has schemes. He has a plan. He has a strategy, and it's really simple. It's not complex. It is not complicated. It's take what's true and just twist it a little. Take what's evident and distort it. Take what's true and twist in just enough lie that we buy into it, and then it harms us, and it harms the people we love. His strategy is to not make himself too evident. Don't make it too obvious. I mean, just find some common ground. Maybe the common ground is love. We should just love each other, and then just put in a little bit of lie so that it takes us down a destructive path. It's like, let's take a good thing like an appetite, and let's twist it to where it becomes an addiction. Let's take something good like desire, nothing wrong with desire, and let's twist it to where it ultimately becomes greed. Let's take something that's appealing, again, nothing wrong with something being appealing. Let's just twist it to where it becomes jealousy. Let's take appreciation, which is a good thing, and let's twist it to where it becomes lust. Let's so twist people's view of God that they get angry at him, make decisions based on their anger, and then blame him for the consequences of their decisions. It's a scheme. It's a plan. And what he says next is so helpful. And again, if you're in the middle of some sort of struggle with temptation or a relationship struggle in marriage or with in your dating or whatever, or a roommate, boyfriend, whatever, listen to these next verse, this next verse, verse 12. Our struggle is not against flesh and blood. It's not just the person or the people in your life. Okay? It's not just your boss or your teacher. It's not just your prodigal son or daughter or your sibling or your parents or whatever. It's not. There's an invisible world that impacts the visible. There's an unseen that impacts the seen. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil, this unseen world that he's talking about in the heavenly realms. And again, for some people, it's like, Paul, I mean, you seem like such a smart guy. I mean, you were educated, you're smart, you wrote, you're just amazing, but you believe there's a devil that has a plan and a scheme and a strategy? I mean, Paul, you're discrediting yourself. You should just leave that part out. You believe there's a devil. Paul says, oh, yeah. And he's a murderer and he's a deceiver. And the means by which he accomplishes his murder is by distorting and twisting the truth. Now, for some of you, you're thinking, I am so glad we are finally talking about this. Chad, I wondered if you even really believed any of this. And I do. I mean, we hardly talk about it around here. For some of you, you say, like, I'm glad we're talking about this because I read passages like this, and sometimes, honestly, it's just a little confusing. Like, really? A double, like, red pitchfork and whatever? You know, for some of you, it's like, man, I think I learned something. I'm going to apply that to my marriage. I'm going to have an argument with my husband. And go, you're of your father, the devil. You know, WWJD, what would Jesus do? Jesus said it, so I'm going to try it. There's another group, maybe for some of you, you've been away from church for a long time, and you go, this is exactly why I quit going. Because you believe. But here's the thing, if you're somebody that's skeptical about it, I totally understand. You know why? Because it's invisible. You know, it's like germs. And besides, you know, everybody can have their own theory of spontaneous generation. I mean, we've all got the freedom to do that. Why people get, you know, it's like, I don't need a devil for why people get addicted to things. I don't need a devil for why people do some of the stuff they do. You know, you don't need a devil to figure all that out. You know, you've got your own explanation as to why that relationship in the past, you know, you just couldn't seem to get along and it just didn't work out, or why that job didn't work out, or why this person did that. I mean, you've got your own explanation. But let's just be real honest. Let's just be real honest for a second. Isn't it true that every once in a while you hear something, you read about something, you see something, and you think to yourself in your gut, that's just evil. That's just pure evil. Everybody has to have a worldview that makes sense. And in your world of sorting out reality, isn't it true that every once in a while you hear about, you see about, you read something, that's just purely evil, and you have no other explanation? I mean, just 2 weeks ago, on a national news show in 2020 was a story of a dog catcher and compliance officer in Park City, just a few miles north of us, church council president, who over a period of 17 years randomly selected, bound, tortured, and killed 10 people from the ages of 9 to 62. We call him BTK. A milkman spends days planning his drive into an Amish community to go into a school where he ties up little girls. He shoots 10 of them, kills 5 of them, all of that because he had lost a child a few years before. How about this? A group spends years and years planning to hijack jets with people in them and fly them into business buildings in New York because this will make God happy. Years planning, and to the very second they crash those planes, they're thinking, all of this makes perfect sense. Or just recently, I was watching a documentary on World War II. And today, you can go to Germany and you can visit concentration camps. And they cover acres and acres, and there are these barracks. This took incredible planning. This was a machine. This wasn't somebody got mad at somebody and out of anger they did somebody or pulled the trigger or whatever. This took years. This was a sophisticated, well-oiled killing machine. And hundreds of thousands of people thought it was the best thing to round up millions of Jewish people who've done nothing to us, steal everything they own, and systematically kill them. And let's kill as many as we can because this will help us accomplish something good. Some of you, you know what happened in Rwanda and Darfur, genocide. A group of people decided, hey, here's a great idea. Let's just kill all the women and children. Let's cut off the hands and the arms of children. Why? Well, because this is going to help us accomplish something good. What? Yeah, there's a group of people this makes total sense to. I mean, we are related to people who thought slavery was a good idea. And many of them use the Bible as justification. Child pornography, it's an industry. Child prostitution, I mean, we could go on and on. I mean, you just pick any one of those and you drill deep down and you explain that without a force. You explain that without an entity. You just explain that without a schemer and a deceiver. Just try to explain it without a devil. You can't. Jesus says, I told you 2,000 years ago, he is a murderer. And he has one tool, and it's deception. And he will not tip his hat to his existence because he does not want to overplay his hand. That there is this invisible world that impacts our visible world every single day. And it's why I, as a somewhat rational human being, lean hard into the teachings of Jesus. It's why I pray for myself on a regular basis. I pray for my family. God, please help me to see as you see. Help me to see people as you see people. People that are very different from me. People that I might consider far from you. Help me to see them as you do. Help me to see the world as you see it, the culture as you see it, money as you see it. Help me to not see it through the lenses of deception. Don't let me be deceived. Because there's a deceiver. There's a twister. And the thing to fear, the thing that we should fear, is that our realities or our minds get twisted, that our thinking gets twisted, that our views of one another get twisted, that our views of marriage and our bodies and sex and morality and raising our kids and money, the world and politics and religion, that somehow they get twisted just enough that we make decisions that result in the destruction of other people. Or our lives, our hearts, our minds, our spirits, our bodies, the human life. So for the next few weeks, we're going to look at some of the big twists. And my prayers as we go through this, that God, through his word and his grace, he would help us to see things a little bit different, to be able to untwist some of the, just a little bit of lie out of some truth and respond to things a little bit different. Because things are not always as they appear. And by the way, week 3, so Sunday after that, just so you know, we'll be PG-13. We're going to talk about sex. And because I'm an 80s kid, and some of you, the song I've been whistling, Shauna will tell you around the house, it's Let's Talk About Sex. There you go. So you know it, you're all sinners. So, but looking forward to having some conversation, authentic conversation about that. So over the next 4 weeks, we're going to try to untangle some things out, some twist, so that we can see certain things, some big things, as God sees them. Let's pray. Father, I just thank you that we have the text that we have, that we're able to lean into not just knowing Jesus, but to have his teachings so that we can understand what he understood, and that we could see what he could see that we may be blind to. So I pray for each one of us, God, today and then over the next few weeks, that you would give us a new set of lenses in how we view ourselves and others and culture and all of that. And Father, I just pray too, because I know there's some that are here this morning or listening online that they know just in what they heard today that there are some areas of their life where they've allowed a little bit of lie to be twisted in, and they're justifying some things and they're saying some things are okay, but deep down in their gut and in their heart, they know if they have to keep fighting to justify it and make excuses and explain why it's right, that they're battling. And God, we just recognize that there is a deceiver that's whispering into all of our ears, just trying to mix just enough lie in, create as much pain and destruction in our lives as he can. So as Jesus taught us in the prayer, in what we call the Lord's Prayer, lead us not into temptation and deliver us from the evil one. It's in the name of Jesus that I pray. Amen.